Hello and welcome to the Black Ladder podcast, a collection of conversations with interesting Black individuals who not only do amazing work but are consciously helping others to climb the career ladder too. Whether it's music or medicine, fashion or farming, tech, science or the creative arts, we'll be sitting on my sofa talking about what they do, how they got there, lessons learned along the way and what being Black in their workplace means to them. I'm your host Ife, bringing you Life Without the L. Hope you're comfy, let's get to it. Today's guest is Stephen Apampa. Stephen is a digital brand manager at Nike, where he plays a role in providing consumers with the best digital experiences. He primarily manages Nike's digital content on Foot Locker's channels. His main responsibility is to bring stories to life through the Nike brand. Prior to starting with Nike, Stephen completed a football industry's MBA before having a week to pack up and move to Amsterdam, as the Nike headquarters are in Holland. He loves football and his favorite color is red, so if you put two and two together, that would make his football team Manchester United. On this week's episode, we talk about racism in football, doing what interests you, marketing yourself, keeping your passion alive in your career, and LeBron James. I also learned that I've been saying Nike wrong for years, so stay tuned to find out what the right way is.
Okay. Ify, part one.
Here we go. This is what... Okay, I need to remain composed because I keep... This is a professional setting for me, if I remain composed. Your partners will always come for me. Welcome to the podcast, the Black Ladder podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. Excited to be on my way on the ladder.
Yay. I'm actually so excited. So everyone, I have known Steve as well for quite a while. When I say quite a while, I probably mean like probably my whole life I've known him. And we grew up in the same area as well. So I feel truly happy to have him here. So the first part of the podcast is a quick fire round, which is super easy. What I'm going to do is just ask you several questions about yourself, because I know you and some other people know you, but the listeners might not know you. So we want to get to know you.
That's calm.
Yay. Okay, first question. What's your name?
My name is Stephen Apampa.
What's your job title at the moment?
Oh, that's a good one. Digital brand manager.
And what motivates you?
Being better than I was yesterday, just being the best I can be and doing things to my standard, which is quite high.
Cool. Okay. Now, let's rewind back a little bit. What did you want to be when you were younger? Think about age between like 4 and 11, so like as a youth. What did you want to be?
I wanted to be a footballer.
Okay. Oh, this is good. And what was your first ever job, the job that like paid you a salary, even if it's just like a local sports direct or something?
I think I was working in a electronic shop. So they were selling like TVs, fridges, and electronics. And I think I was just on the till. I wasn't really selling.
You were just
indirectly selling. I mean, people would ask me for stuff, and then I'd tell them some stuff, and then they would end up buying. But I wasn't really trying to sell them anything. I was just trying to keep the conversation going.
Yeah, was this in like local to where you lived?
Yeah, this wasn't too far. Where was it?
St. Albans?
Yeah, St. Albans it was.
I know that shop. Okay, so next question is, tell us a little bit about, this one might need some more detail, about your education.
Yeah, so education-wise, A-levels, I was at a school called Chancellors, which is just outside London, and close to Barnet, actually. Mm. And A-levels, what did I take for A-levels? I took IT, I took business studies, and I think I took English language or something like that.
Oh, very
good. So yeah, I think those are the three things. So I think you could only pick three things at the time for A-levels, three or four. So those were the three things I definitely remember taking. Got through that ordeal, and then... Because IT back then wasn't really useful IT. It was kind of like very generic and random IT that you'd never actually use. Mm. And then after that, I went to university in Portsmouth where I studied marketing. So I did that for 3 to 4 years, and then graduated, I think, in 2012. Did I? Is it 20? No, 2010 actually.
Yeah.
And then I think I worked for a year or two, and then did my MBA up in Liverpool. So I did a football industry's MBA, or like it was like a sports business MBA, but like really focused on football particularly.
Okay, I'm going to branch out a little bit. I never usually do this in a quick fire round, but I'd love to know, why did you pick a football industry's MBA? Oh, wait, sorry. Why did you even do a master's? That's what I'd love to know.
My mum wanted me to do it, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. So, she was nagging me to do it, that it needed to be done sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, cool. If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do something that I'm really interested in. And then sports marketing is something that I've always been interested in from like a young age. I knew that's what I was going to do, or what I really wanted to do. And it was the only way to really motivate me to do an MBA. If I was going to do one, then to do something I was interested in.
So is that like an advice you'd probably say, that if you're not so keen, or you're not sure if you want to do one, and you want to do one anyway, try to do one something that interests you. Would you say that?
Yeah, I think it's one for life in general. Like, you need to do stuff that you're interested in, otherwise it's just going to fall flat. So like, I've always known I was interested in sports and business. When I couldn't be a footballer, then obviously I wanted to do work in the sports industry. So I'd say 90% of my experiences have been geared towards that. And that's kind of what I've been working towards. So I wouldn't even know how to do something I wasn't interested in, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So next question of quick fire round is all about money, salaries. Love a bit of money. I just think it's so important to talk about money. Not everyone does, and I just think it's important that we talk about it. We want to know what you earn. I'm going to tell you the brackets. Low, 0 to 23. Medium, 23 to 45k. High, 45 to 100k. Extremely high, 100k and above.
Also, I use a different currency, but I think it falls kind of in the high. The high is kind of broad before anyone gets too gassed. So, I'd say high.
Cool. Okay. So, next question, and the final question of the quick fire round is, what's your favourite colour?
Red.
Why red?
Manchester United colours.
I knew you were going to say that. Has it always been red?
I also like blue.
Is that?
I also like blue. No, blue's just a calming color, and just looks good shoes wise and shirt wise. Blues. You can't wear a red shirt in most industries.
That's true. Nice. Okay, end of part one. So welcome back, guys. We are on to the next section, which is obviously the main part of the Black Ladder podcast, where we talk about the career ladder of our guests. So Steve is going to literally walk us through the day he left university and all the different steps he's made on his career to get to where he is right now. I'm super excited because personally, I've actually seen a bit of a preview of it on a PowerPoint he sent me. I think he uses it for work, but it was so cool. Also, Steve, great colours on that PowerPoint.
Messy.
Red, your favourite colour, of course.
And that stands out.
Yes. But, are you ready to run us through? I'm really excited, and I don't know much. I know about what you've done roughly, because I've known you a long time, but it'd be great to get into some of this detail. So just tell us about, I guess, what would you have wanted to know, your younger self? What would you have wanted to know if you were giving your younger self advice on how to get here today? Tell us about your career ladder. Should we start at the day you graduated from Portsmouth Uni?
Yeah, so I think I graduated in 2010, and then I can't remember if I went to work. No, I didn't go for work. So it was kind of like when the recession started. So it was really, really a horrible time, because it was very difficult, because everybody's placements got kind of cancelled. There was no work. And I remember just sending CVs upon CVs upon CVs. I think I must have applied for like 200 roles or something. crazy like that. And then on my old PC, I still have all the ones which I applied for, and it's just like a mountain of different CVs. So I tried different, I did some voluntary work. I did all sorts. I like from the depth and breadth of company I went to was just like incredible at the time. There really just wasn't anyone hiring. And then obviously they had the classic line, which I guess they still use today, is, oh yeah, looking for someone with experience. And just like, okay, cool, how are you going to get it if you, no one's going to give the experience out? So there's quite that situation for a while. And then eventually I think I ended up at a finance company where I was doing as a marketing assistant there. So really not what I wanted to do, but like I was using it to save money to do an MBA, because at that point when you'd been trying to get something for like a long time, then it's kind of like, okay, cool, might as well do the MBA, maybe that will improve my prospects or increase the value that I had.
Yeah, and also give time for the recession to die down a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit. So worked at this finance company, which was interesting because it's kind of like a startup, and it was really run in kind of like a interesting way. I mean, I think towards the end they were letting go of a lot of people, and it was like, it was like apprentice, like you go back from lunch and like you'd see someone packing up their desk or like just leaving, or people not returning back from lunch. And so like I was quite proud because I was one of the last ones. So like and then I actually resigned, so I wasn't actually fired or anything, but I actually resigned. But yeah, it was interesting because you had to learn about marketing finance product, which is not like the sexiest thing to do, and not super interesting, but like learning how to use SMS, the language they use, and different ways that they try to communicate. And it was a completely random group of people. There's some really nice people there that I really got on with, but there's a lot of different characters, and it was very far from my comfort zone and very far from what the path I would have charted for myself. But it was a really interesting time. And then yeah, I was able to shine in that role as well, and I got entrusted with a lot of things there. So even though like I had no interest in finance, I was just able to apply myself. And then from there, I did my MBA. So prior to that, the first time I applied to do this MBA, they said no. They said I needed more work experience, which was annoying at the time. So I've been to like the World Cup previously and got to make some contacts in the sporting industry. So one of them was actually David Dean, who used to be the chairman of Arsenal Football Club. So I knew that he was also giving lectures at this MBA that I wanted to do. So he kindly agreed to write me a letter of recommendation. So I applied the second time round. Obviously, I had that year doing the finance stuff. And then, yeah, they accepted me on this occasion, which was great and something I was really looking forward to. Never been to Liverpool, never lived up north, so it was like a complete culture change. But, yeah, I loved it up north.
For the MBA?
It's like a year.
Oh, okay. So that's an intense one, isn't it? Because I know some people do the two-year one, which is less intense.
Yeah. Wow. No, I did a year. So, yeah, it's every day. Long lectures, and we had like a really international class. So we had people from I think there's only like 5 people from England, so they had like people from everywhere. Slovakia, a lot from China, Italy, Brazil, Mexico, Peru. So it was good. And yeah, it was a lot of fun in Liverpool, and learning about football. So it was like yeah, it was just immediately interested. As long as it involved football and business, then like I just took a natural liking to it, and then I managed to perform pretty well.
You remind us, what's the full name of that course you did at Liverpool?
So, Football Industries MBA.
Nice, okay.
And then, yeah, the last day we had our assessment is at Burnley Football Club. And I always remember this day because like so many things happened on this day. But So we had a crisis assessment task where you go to the football club and they run some crisis drills and you have to see how you respond to it. But prior to that, we had to pick groups, and no one was picking the group with all the Chinese people because obviously that they had a language barrier. Mm-hmm. And so I remember I said, okay, cool, come on, guys, let's make this group together, which was risky at the time because obviously like my final grade is depending on this, but like I didn't like how people were shying away from them. So I went in that group, and obviously I did the majority of the work because it was just obviously there was a language barrier, so it just needed to be done. But yeah, so one of the tasks I remember is that you have a camera and you have like the director of Scottish football is firing questions at you based off like scenarios, and he's pretending to be like people from the press, and it's quite intense because like he'll be twisting your words like the way that the press would. So to give you an idea how intense it was, like I had colleagues that went before us and they came out crying because it's recorded in front of the whole class and it's on like a camera, and like you're really put under pressure. So so I had it there. So I think I just have a skill for blagging or being able to think on my feet. I mean, you sent me a lot of emails and I told you I'm not going to read them because like I just go into the situation. So for me, it was quite fine. I had an answer for everything. And then when it's all said and done, he ended up awarding us the highest mark that he's ever given us. So the highest mark he's ever given anyone on the course is something like 80%. And then I remember all the Chinese people in the group, they, to this day, they thank me every year. And then like they send me like really nice long messages saying, aww, thank you for like not. So I really was really happy for that, number one. And then the other reason is that was also the day I had my phone interview with Nike in order to have potentially go and join them in their European headquarters. So I actually had to be excused from one of the drills so that I could take that call and do that interview. I think it was step one of like eight at that time. So that all happened that last assessment day at my MBA.
Oh my gosh. Step one.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot to unpack in that. First of all, that getting the highest mark in that class, number one. Number two, quick side note, Nike or Nike?
It's Nike.
Okay. Yeah. And 8 steps. That's a lot of steps for an application process.
Yeah, but back then, I don't know how it is now, but back then it was always like that. You wanted to apply at any of these big companies, you had to do all these several tests. And like, I actually wasn't going to apply to Nike because like I'd done this so many times where you had these long steps, and it's just like, at one point you're just like, do I even want it that bad? It's like, it's just long. But my colleague was actually, no, you should do it, try it. So like, I ended up trying it, not expecting too much or even to get to the first one, I was like, okay, cool, let's see. And then from there, it just kept getting through the rounds, which was like really amazing. So it was really good.
This is fantastic. Mm. Okay. Mm. So what comes next after this? So I'm guessing, do you guys have a graduation if you do an MBA as well, like similar to the undergrad?
Yeah, everyone has a graduation. Mm. Yeah. So we had that, and then had I already got the offer from Nike at this point? I can't remember. Yes, because I was already at Nike at this point. So, so the next thing is I had two phone interviews with people from Nike, and those were quite funny conversations because they weren't really like normal procedure. It was quite funny. Mm-hmm. So I ended up getting the role, and so I had like a week to like pack my stuff and leave to Amsterdam. So I actually didn't have a place to stay. So I got off the plane. I traveled to Hilversum actually, and not Amsterdam, which is where Nike's European headquarters is. So I just went to a real estate agent. I was like, yeah, just come off a plane. Don't have anywhere to stay. I've got this X amount of money. I need somewhere, and then ended up moving into a place that day, and then I ended up moving 3 times in 3 months, which was a bit chaotic and stressful. But started at Nike, and then just been working my way up since then and up until now.
So just to rewind back a little bit, moving from the UK to Amsterdam, obviously, like, even just the way you said, after, you know, moving for 3 months, moving houses for the three more times in the next 3 months or whatever, how was that for you? Because it's that you said you had a week to pack your stuff and move. What were you feeling at the time? Were you nervous? Were you excited? Of course, I know Amsterdam's only, what, 45-minute flight away, but how were you feeling?
I think I was quite excited at the time. I wasn't thinking too much of it because I was used to living in different places at this point. So I think it's maybe the third or fourth country I've worked in already. So I was more excited and just wanting to get started on the adventure. And when I look back at it, it's pretty insane. But so I just remember getting off and then just going straight to find this place.
What was your first role at Nike?
Yeah, so my first role, I was working in football brand. So I was assisting like the football brand team with their marketing campaign and just kind of helping out wherever I could, which was really exciting because I wanted to work in football. So that was great. And then I think, so we got to do like a lot of exciting tournaments, got to work with a lot of athletes, which is always exciting. And then, just that working at Nike is just like an amazing place. Like, it's just a different culture. Mm. You wear sneakers to work. We have like a training pitch. We have a football stadium basically on campus. You have an indoor football facility. You have a gym. You're encouraged to go to the gym. You have workout classes. You're encouraged to go to workout classes. And it's just very flexible way of life. So it's really a very different working environment to what I'd been exposed to in the UK, and one which suited me personally really well.
Mm. And what year was this roughly that you were in your first role?
That's a good question. Let me think.
2016, 2017?
I think it's 2016. Okay. Yeah, because when did I do my MBA?
2015.
It'd be like the year after I did my MBA. So if I did my MBA 2015, it'd be 2016, yeah.
And how long were you in that role for before you, I guess, got promoted or moved up?
It was like a year. Okay. And then I went to do football retail brand, so focusing more on the retail side of it and how Nike shows up at retail and kind of helping the different territories around Europe kind of take their directive. So at Nike, you get a directive from the global team, which gets passed down to the EMEA team, the European team, and then we take that information and then we make it more relevant for Europe, and then we brief it into our different territories who are locals, or in London, Berlin, Paris, and so forth. So that was our role, was taking a directive and then working it out and then helping the guys execute it in within the territories. Wow. So I did that, and then I did that for a year, and then I got an opportunity to do digital brand.
Okay.
Which is basically looking after digital brand for on the Foot Locker account. So basically working for Nike on the Foot Locker account. So all the stuff that happens on Foot Locker, which concerns Nike, we would have a point of view on or have a relationship with Foot Locker to make sure it's as it should be, or we're giving our consumers the best experience. So that's called wholesale marketing. Mm. And then obviously Foot Locker is one of the biggest wholesale retailers in the whole world. So that was like a really exciting opportunity. Yeah. And then I did that for a year, and then
did you get that role? Because to me it sounds like you mentioned digital, which is a little bit different to what you were doing previously, the retail brand, right?
Yeah.
How did you transition, or did someone ask you to, did they say, oh, we think you'd be great here, you should apply, or did you just go for it? Did you talk, like, how did you go about getting that digital role?
Yeah, I think I actually applied for the same role, but for JD, which is like a competitor of Foot Locker. It's the same thing at Nike. So Footlocker, it'd be Nike times JD. So that's the one I applied for. Mm-hmm. But they already had a preferred candidate, so I knew it was a bit of a long shot. Mm-hmm. But I interviewed so well that they were like, okay, cool. We actually want to put you forward for this Footlocker role. It's the same position, but just a different account. Mm-hmm. So I was okay, cool. So I did my presentation, and then they liked it, and then ended up getting the opportunity at Footlocker.
Was that sort of like an internal recruitment process? It sounds like it to me.
Yeah, and I saw the job online, in the internal job postings, and then I applied for the one at JD, and then from there ended up at Foot Locker.
Nice. How's that going?
Digital brand specialist, so that's cool. So then working on like digital runner shows, campaign assets, delivering that to Foot Locker, managing the relationship with Foot Locker, or assisting my manager with that relationship, and then just basically assisting my manager. And then I think he was then leaving the company, and then I got put forward to replace him and become the manager. So for part of the year I was doing both roles because he had already left and they hadn't filled the position. So
oh my gosh.
I did both roles, and I guess the director and the people in the team liked what I was doing, and then managed to become the manager, and then that's kind of where I've been now for, I think it's like a year and a half, the position. Wow. Now maybe coming up to 2 years, I guess.
My gosh, that's amazing. Like that jump as well, like the trust they had in you especially, and also the effort it was that was there to do two roles at the same time, kind of thing, and not just it's not two roles on the same level, it's like one role and then another senior role. That's quite a lot. How are you juggling your work-life balance at the time? Was it quite easy, or did you find you were doing lots of late nights? You know, how was that?
So I think like at Nike, it's a very fluid company. So I think a lot of people will tell you that they're doing two roles or equivalent. Like even now I'm doing like 2.5 roles or something like that right now. Mm. So I think it's definitely part of the culture, although they're trying to change it so it's not less demanding. But like the first year I went there, like the culture was very like working really hard but also like playing hard as well, so it's kind of very intense environment. And I guess it's fine for me because it's just something I can adapt to. I always adapt to the situations I'm in, and then I know when my limits are, when I need to take a break or change it up or things like that. So I think it's served me well till now. But yeah, it can be intense, and that's the thing. It's very fast paced at Nike. It was so fast paced that even the first 4 months where I was there, I thought I wouldn't make it because it was just like crazy.
Now, I know you love football, and that's like a passion of yours, in or out of work, end of. Am I right?
Correct.
Yeah. My question to you is, how do you not let your passion of football and sports in general become jaded when you're working in that industry?
The best thing about working in football and sports is that there's so many sources of inspiration. So whether it's meeting the players, I had like many amazing experiences where I've got to meet some players, work up and close with them. So like even if there's a point where maybe things are a little bit difficult, like those opportunities and those moments help put a great release and help put things in perspective. And also just playing the sport playing football is a therapy anyway. It takes you from a lot of your trouble. So I was still actively playing sport, and I'm obsessed with football and I'm obsessed with sport. So like even if I wasn't working there, I would still be into it. So I think it's never really been a case where it's diminished. And then obviously working at their company, I've actually added new sports that I'm interested in as well. So like basketball is something I'm really getting more into, and increasing my knowledge of that. I was always interested in athletics, but there's so many sporting heroes which work for Nike or on the books at Nike that you just get inspired by all of their stories, and the fact that you're able to get so close to them. I mean, Kobe Bryant was on our campus obviously before he passed away, and then recently I got to do a project with LeBron James, so he was on our campus, and then we got to do something with him in Paris. So these moments kind of give you the energy and give you the inspiration to keep going.
Wow. So I'm guessing there's a lot of travel involved in your role, would you say so?
Before this whole situation, yes, and then I think that's going to drastically change. So I'm not expecting to be going anywhere anytime soon or anytime as often. But like prior to that, there was quite a lot of traveling.
Okay, this is so fantastic. I guess that's kind of moves us on to the next question, which is all about. I want to know what's been the highlight of your career so far. That's a hard question, I know. You can give me like two if you want. You don't have to make it one.
I guess when you first get there or first actually getting the opportunity will always be number one. And then I think also getting the opportunity to become like the manager as well, because that happened to me when I was quite young. And then I've had quite like a rapid change of my roles as well. So getting that opportunity, I really think helped set me up for the future. So I'm very, very grateful for the people in the company that believed in me or gave me the opportunity. And that's kind of my motivation, not to let anyone down or not to let anyone feel like maybe that wasn't the right decision. So I think those two moments stand out for me.
What's a typical day in the office like for you? But we want you to start like at the very start. So you leave your house, you probably, I'm guessing in Amsterdam, do you cycle to work? And then you get to the office, what happens? Do you go to a meeting? You open your laptop, coffee, tea? What's a typical day?
Okay, cool. You don't really have typical days at Nike. I think they're all very different, like depending on, it's a very unique, is that every day can be so drastically different, which is something that I like, because when I was working in my previous roles, I could kind of tell you how my whole week was gonna go. Mm-hmm. Especially when I was working at Wembley, I think I was working for IMG, I could tell you how my week was gonna go, what I was gonna do, and it was kind of like clockwork. But Nike is very different, so I say typically I get the train, because I'm living in Amsterdam and Nike's headquarters is in Hilversum, which is about a 40-minute train journey.
Oh, wow.
So you do that in the morning, and then I guess I'll go into the office, I'll open my laptop, and then just see where the day is taking me. And then usually it's a couple of meetings. Luckily I have a lot of friends who I knew who moved from the UK, also working at Nike in Hilversum, and a lot of us were working football together, and somehow we happened to be sitting all around each other. So I probably go and check them, kind of, because we have a flexible seating arrangement, so you can kind of work wherever you want. So we just go and link up with them, just get on with the work and go to meetings, and then catch a couple of jokes with them or whoever's around. So you have a lot of people from everywhere in the world, and you have such a good atmosphere that you can just catch up with anybody, and it's all pretty positive. But like largely your meetings dictate your day and what you're doing and things like that, if you have a presentation. So every day is kind of different or has a different problem or struggle that you need to overcome.
True. Okay, my next question is on people. Now, you're a manager. Does that mean do you manage people? Well, how many people do you manage?
So officially I manage one, but also there's other people in the team that I don't want to say like mentor, but like obviously they ask me for like support and things like that. So I try to help them out, because someone also helped me out as well.
What's it like managing someone? Because that's not something that everyone's familiar with. Not all roles, not everyone manages people. Like, how do you find it?
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I think it's something, it's a real skill, and it's something that you need, obviously, experience to do, and it's managing people. So I think the better you know someone, the easier it is. But I guess it's getting to know the people that you're managing, trying to understand, what motivates them, how they work, and then also being open yourself to, look at the way you're managing things and see if you're getting the best out of people, if your processes are getting the best out of people, because people work in different ways, and especially within companies, there's many ways of working, and some ways might be different to the ways that you're used to. But you really have to try and be open and just be someone that can listen and understand how people work.
So I have one more question, because I know we probably need to move to the next round soon, but my question was, I'm guessing you partner with lots of different brands and platforms, am I right in that?
As a no not many brands. So obviously, because we're a brand ourselves, so it's mainly Nike, Jordan, or Converse, which are the Nike brands. And then so we partner with retailers and athletes and influencers as our main. And it's not really a partnership. It's kind of we work together with these sets of people and organizations.
So what skills would you say, if someone was wanting to get into a role like yours, what skills would you say they need to be able to do that part of the role? Because obviously I think one that I can think of is communication skills. But what else would you say is needed to be able to do your role and to work well with other people who aren't in your business necessarily? Do you know what I mean? It's not like they're your colleagues, but they are in a different way.
Yeah, I think understanding kind of their point of view. So like I understand like Foot Locker's point of view, and I understand like Nike's point of view, and sometimes when it all matches up, it's great, but sometimes it's slightly different. So you just need to understand where other people are coming from and then speak to them in a language that they understand. So like the way we work internally is the way is different from way other companies work. So that kind of respecting that and understanding that. So it's like if you go abroad and I go to France, I'm not going to try and speak Italian there because they're not going to understand that. So you need to figure out how people operate. And I think also just being open to learning all the time, persevering, and you just really believing in your own abilities and that you have value to add, and being proactive. So I think I've gotten, I think what sets me apart is just I'm always being proactive, like what can I do or how can I improve things or what's coming around the corner. So that's constantly something I'm fascinated about or constantly thinking about. And when you're proactive, then you get ahead of, not that you're competing with other people, but you do get ahead of other people who aren't thinking in that way. So proactivity, I think, is a really important one.
Okay, I know I said that was the last question, but I have one more. Honestly, I don't know if you can, if it's confidential, obviously don't tell us, but what exciting campaigns or what exciting projects have you worked on that you can tell us about? Are there any? I mean, or are they all like hush-hush?
If I've worked, they're worked on, so they're already out. I can touch on the ones which are already out. I worked on a campaign with LeBron James. So he came to visit a Foot Locker store in Paris. So we crafted basically his journey into the store, capturing the social content, the Q&A that I handled there. So that was pretty amazing to see this like global athlete up close and personal. I think in football, I worked for a Nike Mercurial campaign. Mercurial is a type of boot, football boot, that Nike produces. And we took over Palais de Tokyo in Paris as well. It's just like a really amazing experience. And we had like a lot of footballers pass through there. So it's actually got to welcome like Kylian Mbappe before he got really famous and meet his parents as well. So like that was like a really cool opportunity. So there's been a lot of projects that I've got to work on, and I think I get really excited about working with our athletes and bringing their stories to life in a different way. So I think recently I did one with a PSG footballer called Thilo Kerha, and that one I was really excited about that because the concept and idea I had was just to bring this PSG's collection to life in a different way. And he has African heritage, so you actually see that in the imagery that we actually use like African clothing and African styling to bring this PSG kit to life in a different way. And that was really authentic to his story, and it came out really nicely. So I think just off the top of my head, there's a couple, but honestly, there's loads.
Wow, this is so, like, it's so fascinating. I actually love this so much. Thank you for telling us about your career story. That's amazing. I'm hoping that footballer that you just mentioned would one day, maybe season 3, 4 of a Black Ladder podcast, would be willing to come and share his story of how he made it as a footballer. But
yeah, he's pretty big right now.
I'm going to leave it to you, Steve. Yeah, I know you can do it. Okay, so we should probably move on to the part, you know, the reason why this podcast is called the Black Ladder Podcast. Should we talk a bit about being black? I mean, we're both black, so I'm hoping you can contribute to that conversation as well, right?
Yeah, I hope so too.
Okay, cool. welcome back. Now we're onto the section, which is where we're going to talk to Steve about how being black has affected his career climb. I'm going to not do as much freestyling this time, and I have written down some questions I want to ask him anyway. So I know you, before COVID and the Rona decided to appear upon us, you used to travel a lot. What was it like traveling as a black professional? Because that's what I call you. But I know you focus on EMEA, which is Europe, Middle East, and North Africa, right?
Yeah.
So how has that been for you? Have you noticed differences in the different countries you've been to? Do people react to you differently? Have you, you know, that could be positive and negative. You know, what vibes have you gotten when you've been traveling in your job?
So we travel a lot, and we travel, it might be for a day or it might be 2 days. So it's never really a long stay. So like, I don't want to like over generalize or anything like that, because obviously it's based off 48 hours and it could be that someone's having a great day or someone's having a bad day. Mm. But yeah, I think it's not really about being black per se, but it's just understanding that different countries have different ways of doing things, which is really interesting. So like in France, for instance, I find that the team's really kind of very close knit. Obviously, like, speaking the language is something that really helps you, and if you don't speak the language, then it can be very tough to kind of break in and, you know, integrate. Not so much from my role perspective, because obviously the company I work for is an American company, and then everyone speaks English or another language as well. Mm-hmm. But like, just if you're dealing with like external vendors in Paris or anything, it can be quite difficult to connect with them if you don't speak the language. Oh, but yeah, in Paris it's like really amazing, because you have like a lot of African culture in the city as well. Paris in general, there's obviously has its racial tensions, which at times you can actually feel it. If you're in Paris at the wrong times, you can feel it. But like, it's such an amazing place with different kinds of people, and so many positives and so many opportunities. So like, culturally it's very diverse, and also culturally there's a lot of tension there, but it's a really beautiful country, and like, some of the funniest and craziest people are from Paris, so I really enjoy when I get the opportunity to go there. Mm. Italy obviously has a very big food culture in terms of and also coffee is really important there. So I don't really drink coffee, so like, they never really understand like how I function without coffee. But it's really really interesting to see that the family unit there. You don't see, I'd say I don't really see too many black people in Italy. So that's one thing that I did notice, is that compared to like France or Paris anyway, like in Milan, it doesn't seem to be as many people. So I guess that's an interesting coincidence. I'm not sure why that is, but I haven't really had any problems. I went to Greece as well to do something for the NBA. So that was really interesting as well. And again, not many black people that I came across in Greece. And actually, it was interesting because we're working with an athlete called Yanis Antetokounmpo, who's a Nigerian, but like grew up in Greece and has a really interesting backstory. So he's one of the biggest stars in the NBA. And he was actually talking about how difficult it was for him to come through in Greece and be accepted. But then obviously as he got better and as he raised the profile in Greece, obviously people started to embrace him. But it was really interesting to hear his story about how he overcame that and to be where he is today. So I'd say like, when you're traveling, it may be different if I was staying in these countries for like months, mm-hmm. but it's really a flying visit. It's 48 hours, 3 days, max a week. And then out. So not really long enough to really draw any major conclusions, I would say.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you about the big elephant in the room. Everyone knows that it's actually gotten worse in the past few months, possibly. Or maybe it hasn't gotten worse and it's just come more to the light, maybe. But racism in football, it's not something that's like... Earlier this evening, I just Googled the word racism in football, and one of the headlines that's coming up is racism in football is bubbling up again. What are your thoughts on that? Because you are obviously somebody who's around that industry, the football industry, or not. You're closer to it, is what I'm trying to say. Like, it never went, did it?
I think there's racism everywhere, so I think it would never really completely go, unfortunately. But I think football is a reflection of society. So I think it's not so much racism in football, but in the society. So you look at kind of called the political changes which have happened. You look at the Brexit situation, you look at what's happening in America, and I think you need to look at it from a social point of view. Is socially, this is a topic which has come up again. And you see, like, very recently, the killing of Ahmed, who was jogging. So I think it's a more of societal problem, which has then crept its way into football. And I think in life, everything happens in cycles. So obviously, there was a period where we didn't completely stamp it out, but it was socially, it was like, okay, cool, we're going to embrace foreigners. We do not want to have this kind of stigma. We're going to proactively embrace people. So you really saw a population boom in terms of the amount of foreigners in the UK and the kind of, like, you know, the different shops that we have. If you go to London now, the different ethnicities that you have there, the different types of food. And then I think now we're going to a cycle of a period where people are feeling threatened again, and then now trying to close borders, and then that's bringing up this topic of racism again. And I think football is just a reflection of society, so I don't think it's something that's unique to football, but it's more a reflection of us as a society. And, you know, when you say Brexit, obviously that has an impact on footballers, because, you know, they come from all over the world. So, like, when there's a tension in the country around Brexit, that's going to find itself in its terraces, where you've got people who are on opposing side, people want to remain, people wanted to leave, but they're all coming to watch football. So you're going to have different people, different opinions. And now, because of the climate, some of those people think they can voice their opinions in ways which are not healthy or appropriate. So I don't think it's something in football. I think it's something in society. And then that's kind of where it needs to be tackled first. I think football's kind of like at the end, but the root cause is the society. And I think we all need to look at ourselves a little bit and just say, look, where are we going with this? And, you know, why this sudden fear of foreigners, or why this need to Brexit or exit or ban this people from here, or close the border here, or so, like, it's kind of that. But like I said, everything in life is cycles. When we studied history, we seen kind of when it, back in history, when they open up the borders, we seen the evolution of slavery. And I think this is just another cycle, and I think how we manage this is going to be very crucial to what we see going forward.
So you mentioned BAME there, and it would be great to hear about whether you are involved, or does your company offer any BAME clubs, BAME groups? What's their stand on that? Or what? And also, as a manager yourself, what's your stand on BAME?
Yeah, we do have our networks on campus, and then we try to get involved. But really, it's something about inclusivity. So I'm a bit on the fence with not BAME in general, but having these subsectors of groups, because it's also kind of like, although the message in each group is one of inclusivity, it's kind of a division. You know, if you have the LGBT community, this is what we are called. Okay, cool, we have BAME, this is what we do. And then you have whatever the next one is. It's like, kind of like, could there not be one group that just fosters inclusivity? So rather than making it, I get that different things need different focuses, but like, if you have one group, and maybe you can divide the calendar and say, okay, cool, we're going to shine a particular light on this issue, we're going to shine a particular light on this issue. But like, I think there can be a beauty in coming together. And then when you have all these different divisions, it's still seen as a division, if you understand. So that's kind of, I get the work that they're doing, and it's all really important. But I just wonder if, like, if we all came together as one network and try to commonly understand it, because what you have there is, in the BAME network, you obviously get people who classify themselves as BAME, but you might get some people in the LGBTQ community, but like, they're kind of kept separately. So it's kind of like, if we could all mix with each other and understand each other a little bit better, then maybe that would be, could bring around a bigger response. But at the same time, I get that not all groups are represented equally. So maybe the fact that we need to have a BAME one is because we feel that our voices aren't being heard, and we need a particular focus on that. So there's different, many schoolings. I like the fact of people coming together to encourage and uplift people. I think there's a strength in that. but it's just kind of how can we increase the impact.
Yeah, it's really funny that you mentioned BAME and LGBTQ and if one wasn't including the other, because about a year ago now possibly I went to this event at Salesforce, and I thought I was going to a BAME event at Salesforce. I got there and it was great, actually. It was a BAME for LGBTQ event, so it was both mixed up. And I've never seen anything like that. I've seen one or the other, but I've never seen it put together. And it was so interesting. And I think what had happened is they invited kids from different schools in the area. So Salesforce is like in Liverpool Street, so in the outer area, they had invited them into the office. They have fantastic offices, by the way, really great view. But I got there and I was like, everyone was like, oh, you're here for the LGBTQ event. I was like, oh no, I'm here for the BAME. They were like, yeah, it's joined. I was like, this is fantastic. But that was the first time I've heard of one. And you make a really good point there, like how if you're in one group or you're in both groups, do you then pick? I guess we can move on to my final question, which is quite general. Has being Black affected your career in any way, positively or negatively?
So I think in terms of answering negatively, I think only the people that are in power can really tell you that one. But I have had an experience anyway. I say it's like when I was at Wembley, I think one of my, not my direct manager, but one of the managers who, he didn't manage me, but was there, made like a racist comment to me at the workplace. And like that was, yeah, that was very shocking. I was quite young at the time. I think I was maybe between 18 and 22, I'd say. So it shook me up and it made me really angry. It just kind of bent me all out of shape. And I remember telling my parents, who were also like angry, but like at the time there wasn't really anywhere I could go to, like, so it's just kind of like, I just had to accept it, because it's just like, okay, cool, this is a guy that's pretty senior in the company, and like who would I tell, who would take it seriously? Because I think in that office also there wasn't many Black people there. It was actually to the point that when I used to go to lunch, all the Black people would be in, most majority of them would be in catering. So when I used to go to lunch, they used to look at me like, wow, you've made it. And I was like, no, I haven't made it, this is like, I'm still at like the beginning of my career. And I never really understood that nuance. I was also, I never really understood why they were so like enamored with the fact that I was in the office until like later on I was like, okay, cool, this is what's happening. And then I saw it, but like that was a really rough experience, because yeah, there's just nowhere to go. You just had to accept it and then just try and get over it. I eventually left that place, but I would say it was something that was negative. And then I did have go for jobs which I thought I should have got within that place that I didn't get. I don't know whether that had a part to play. I think I don't think so. I think they, because I think at that time I was starting my career, so I probably, not that I wasn't confident, but like I didn't have the big personality then. I was doing my job well, but like, you know, I was kind of quiet or something like that. And I think it was just like a personality, like the other person that they hired was obviously more outgoing and more out there. So I think it was more of a story about being introverted versus being extroverted, more than color, I'd like to believe. But like, yeah, I did get like a bad racial experience there. In terms of positive, I feel like now there's never been a better time to be a Black person, which maybe sounds crazy right now, but like African culture has just kind of exploded from a marketing point of view. And, you know, people really want to get the point of view on, you know, what is appealing to the culture. You have all these movements like, oh, yeah, doing it for the culture, or, you know, Black Lives Matter. And, you know, obviously hip hop and rap and all these things have big cultural influences today. And obviously people in the industry and marketers and companies want to get to know this group better. So like, you know, I talked about a couple of the campaigns where I've been able to infuse African culture or an African point of view in that. So it's been really exciting. And I know a lot of companies are interested in this demographic and, you know, how can you authentically provide services and experiences which help this target segment. So I think there's a lot of opportunity. So you're seeing even with music, with Afro beats as a genre has come on really strongly. You know, now everybody's going to Afro Nation, whereas before that wasn't the case, or I don't think there was a nation that was existing before in at least 4 years ago, there wasn't any kind of nation that I was aware of. But like now you have Afro Nation. Now Ghana did Year of Return, which ironically people went and then returned back. Nigeria's doing something of the equivalent, Homecoming also. So all these things are really great opportunities to leverage that. And I'd said like life is about time, chance and cycles. So obviously this is a period which is booming for us. And then so I think it's a great, there's a lot of great opportunities. You have a lot of great black African influencers, stylists, creators who are getting the platform to do stuff like Virgil Abloh's at Louis Vuitton and things and things like that now. So like, you know, this, it's been reflected in society. So I think it's an exciting time, basically.
That's great. I always think it's, of course, there can be some, there is negativity in racism, but it's also nice to see that being black doesn't always have to be, hasn't always had a bad effect on people's careers. So it's really great. Thank you for sharing that. So we're back and we're going to do the final section of the podcast today. This epic, awesome guest is going to give us some top tips. Basically, he's looking down his career ladder, he's climbed, he's all the way up. Right now he's a digital brand manager at Nike, which I said correctly. I used to call it Nike, but Nike it is. And he's going and he's going to look back down this ladder and look at all the way he's, all the jobs he's done, all the roles he's climbed up, the ladder he's climbed. And I'm going to ask you, Steve, what advice are you leaving, or what top tips are you going to leave on that career ladder for the next person who wants to climb it, your ladder?
Yeah, I think marketing themselves is really important. Everybody has their own personal brand, whether they want to acknowledge it or not. But things are done by perception and reputation, whether you like it or not. That's kind of how human beings make judgments. So just being aware of your brand and what you're putting out there, or what experiences people have with you. I would say like networking, and I know people obviously use that word and it has a certain connotations, but I would say even if you, if Instagram's your thing, finding people who inspire you on Instagram, reaching out to them in a DM, finding ways that you can add value to them, whether, and it doesn't always need to be free. You can do stuff where they introduce you to other people, or you know, just exchanging services. LinkedIn is a really good platform to finding different people and understanding things that they do. So I reach out to a lot of people to understand kind of what they do, what their work is, and if there's an opportunity to collaborate. I find people on Twitter and I reach out to them. So I think never be afraid to reach out to people. It's really important, because at the end of the day, business is a people-led organization. So like, you're going to have to deal with people until they invent the robots, then it's still going to be people. And the more people you know, and the more people that have positive experiences with you, the better your chances are, or the more useful those connections can be. So something I would start early, and actually understanding how to network and how to do that properly. And then the other one I think is just having a good support network, and having people that are gonna give you confidence. And mentors are a really important thing, people that can show you the way, because like a good mentor can probably save you, like, let's say like 2 years of hardship, but because they've kind of trodden that path, and you know, they also have their own network that they can put you on. So I think finding people that you look up to, that are kind of in the field that you want to work with, and staying close to them and taking advice from them. So I had a couple of people that I had as mentors when I was growing up. Like, it didn't always work out, like they didn't necessarily have a job for me, but I was gaining experience of like what I should be doing, how they're working, and just looking at them, so that by the time I got the opportunity, I was ready, and then I was able to perform. So I think I'm a culmination of all my experiences and all the advice that I've been given.
I love that. Reach out, get a supportive network, talk to people, and you can always ask for, you don't need to ask for money all the time. You can ask for other services. Love that so much. That's fantastic. This is such great advice. Honestly, I feel like you even littered advice throughout the whole episode. I remember earlier you said you're a really proactive person, so I'm guessing another thing you'd let people know is always be proactive. Like, yeah,
always be on the front foot. Big always.
Way. This is so good. Thank you so much. I mean, this is just so fantastic. I guess it'd be so great to know if people want to ask you for advice or learn a little bit more about being a digital brand manager or working at Nike, or even if they have questions about doing a master's in football industries, where can we find you? Like, where can we get in contact with you? What are your socials is what I'm asking. Or your details.
Any of the major platforms. I think you can post it up when you put the episode online. For sure. LinkedIn, I think I'm on Instagram. I've just come back to Twitter. I avoided it because it can be a place where careers go to die.
That place is wild.
so I think I've tentatively started again on Twitter, but I say LinkedIn and Instagram are the main ones, I'd say.
Cool. I will definitely link that information in the description box, so everyone please check it out. And if you do have questions, I'm sure Steve will be happy to help. Obviously, you can all hear how exciting his career has been. I follow him on social media and I know it's exciting. So also, just a little shout out to the listeners out there. Steve makes jollof rice now, so that is something you can reach out to him about.
Yeah, the shop will soon open, soon come.